Is that teen spirit you smell or just great radio? I'm not sure which, but I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got a little special, lighthearted, pre-recorded Friday content for you. I am joined today by my good friend and yours, Luke Mathers, who graces these airwaves from time to time. Luke and I are of different generations, so we may get to some generational sparring. Having been born in the 19th or so, I think
I'm just the 90s, resident young guy around here. That's all.
Yeah, that's very nice, young man. Thank you for your opinion. Get your sneakers off the Davenport. We may get to a little generational sparring. But Luke, being a both card and board game aficionado, we know you love cribbage. Can't wait to play tomorrow. What are some of your other, like, you play euchre, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one, too.
Speaking of Bob Euchre, right?
Yep, like, speaking of euchre. Excellent game. I've just played pretty much... Sheepshead is one of my favorites as well. It's hard, though, to find five that will play. It always takes a little convincing. Like, my wife knows how to play, but she always is, like, in the hot seat if she's, like, the fifth, because she knows.
Oh.
She, like, hopes that there's at least one other person at the family gathering. So it's, like,
newbie-ish.
Well, it doesn't have to be her, because she's, like, I know that if I don't play, everybody else will be upset. But she's, like, I don't really like to play kind of thing. So
You mean it's like people that play on Bar League softball teams and act like it's, you know, USA women's softball at the Olympics and you need to remind them to calm the heck down?
No. It's the exact opposite of that person, though. My dad plays Sheepshead like that mindset where he's like, I need to take every single nickel off of this table. And if I'm not walking out of here,
taking you out.
Yeah, that's how my dad plays. But Kelsey's like, I don't want everybody else not to be able to play.
She's
so
not pulling
a
hammy, rounding first base,
no.
trying to stretch a single into a double. She's just trotting into first.
She's like, which queen goes over which queen again kind of thing. It's like, oh, okay, I'm just trying not to break the rules.
Yeah, I can play Sheepshead, but it sounds like I would be closer to your wife's kind of skill level. Like, I gotta have to have my cheat sheet thing out on the phone to remind me of how it all works together. But the mechanics of the card playing are very reminiscent of other games. It's just how the cards line up and what beats what is a wee bit more complicated. But I like euchre because it permits the smack talking. I like cribbage because it permits good smack talking. And there's also, you know, like, there's an ethos in cribbage. No matter how badly you're losing, you can't quit. Grunt it out, like gut it out.
You gotta avoid the
bitter
snug line. Like, if you're like, okay, I'm gonna lose this game, my goal is still get to 91 before they peg out. So it's like, come on, like, just avoid the skunk line, and that's what you gotta do. But the nice part about Sheepshead is, and maybe if you're looking for that fix of smack talk, it's not the best game, though, because in Sheepshead, you want to keep everybody at the table happy because you don't know who your next partner is going to be. Because as soon as you change deals, like, as soon as you finish a round, it's like, depending on where the cards lay and who's calling what, like, you could all of a sudden be partnered up with one of the people that you were just trying to beat. And so it's a very, you have to be collaborative. You have to be thinking about the different, I think, skill levels that everybody brings to the table. Because when you do have some really, like, cutthroat Sheepshead players at the table with some newer blood, it's not as much fun, because those cutthroat folks are just like, what are you doing? You shouldn't have played that card that way. You let out with that when this was called Trump. Like, what's going on?
What are you doing?
And it's like, so you do have to, the five people you play with, or the five people playing, are very
matters.
Important. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I am about picking golf foursomes. Like, first of all, I will not golf in a golf tournament unless it's a scramble, because my reliable golf stroke is about, like, one out of every six or seven swings I take.
Yeah.
And then I litmus test, like, do you get really intense about this? Because if so, I'm not joining your foursome. Now, I can drive a ball 250 yards every once in a while, and it's generally straight, and I can putt. I got a really good short game. But if you want some consistency and somebody to, like, really be into it, like, not your gal, find a different female to join your foursome.
I was always I'm here for a good time, not a good game kind of mindset in any of those.
Wear beer cards, yes. Right? Like this is the point of golfing. Hello.
Yeah.
Folks, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to a special pre-recorded Friday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. We're having some yucks with my good friend and yours, Luke Mathers. You can hear him every week on Todd Albo's show from noon to two and with Pat Kreitlow in the early, early mornings all across the Civic Media Radio Network. Let's get into the 90s. I just read a very, very fascinating Substack article about this because a lot of people that are in the Gen X generation will often point to the 90s as this sort of halcyon days. There's been a whole bunch of stuff flying around on social media insinuating that the light was like that sunlight looked better and was more beautiful and cozy or whatever in the 90s, which is whatever, a little nuts. But that people talk about the 90s as if it was like the zenith, the epic of prosperity and happiness. And so I wanted to kind of just chew on this idea a little bit with you, Luke, because yes, if like I'm not sort of trad wife, let me go back to the 50s with my farmhouse and these weird gender roles. Like, yes, the 90s had the benefit of, you know, the technology increases in modern medicine, right? We were post women's rights and civil rights. Like these things were part of the ethos. It was baked into the cake. But it's not like any decade is without its drawbacks. One of the things that, you know, we were talking about some of the films that came out, you know, of course, Major League 90s film. And a lot of the, if you think about Home Alone, a classic kind of 90s film, you think about Ferris Bueller, late 80s, but kind of moving into the 90s, that kind of thing. It's like, well, everyone lives in $1.5 million home in Winnetka, Illinois, with two working parents that are like super cool, like strict, but not too, with like a car and all the cool stuff.
Yeah.
Like the Home Alone house is insane, right? It's like,
it's a mansion. It's a mansion.
It is correct. It's a Winnetka, Illinois mansion. So not being from that era, like, yes, you lived through the 90s, obviously.
I was born in the 90s. So,
God.
Kid of the 90s.
Oh, it hurts. It hurts. Everyone
sorry,
hurts.
Not trying to rub it in or anything.
You can go ahead and rub it in. We all have our vulnerabilities. I think there's some complexity around some of the ways that we all in our way tend to think things were peachy or better or best or something to be emulated again. When we think back to if we were fortunate and blessed enough to have really happy childhoods or whatever it is, to revert to that. I mean, certainly you can see that in some of our political discourse today, the even branding of the new Republican Party, right? So not being from that era, what's your take on the 90s, Luke?
I think in this context, as in a lot of different contexts, nostalgia is a hell of a drug. Like any time that you have like this longing for a bygone era, because that's what it is, like the 90s started 35 years ago now. Like 1990 is 35 years away. And so the fact that you can sometimes look back on times with a lot rosier glasses than what they actually truly were, it leads to this kind of false impression for a lot of people. So I think there's like a long, you're like, oh, it was simpler back then. Like you said, the sunlight was different. Like, what are we talking about?
No, it people? Wasn't.
Like, what? Okay. And so I think that there is both in a reverence of the 90s, or if you're talking about a political movement that now looks back on the 50s with reverence. In both instances, it's like one of the belief that you could go back in time to something like that is just, it's silly, but it is something that a lot of people can relate to. it's a relatable thing because we all like we all have
nostalgia
some portion of
something,
it. Yes.
Right? There's very much an element of that. And it's interesting when people engage in nostalgia, if you truly have those very warm, fuzzy, positive feelings about a particular era, you're not likely to have your brain move to the more problematic social components of that era, right? Like, oh, this was this great time for me. It's hard for me to acknowledge that maybe the 50s weren't so great for Black and brown people and women, that there were fewer choices, all those kinds of things. And I think it makes it, when people hold hard onto nostalgic ideas, it becomes really hard to deal with realities that conflict with those warm fuzzies about the nostalgic or the nostalgized, I don't know if that's a word, past.
We can make right? it a word.
It sure just happened, right? Yeah. That's kind of a bit of where I think our political discourse has gotten stuck. And so I've tried to, with, you know, taking off my rose-colored glasses, taking off my little brainwashed nostalgia for the 90s, tried to look back with a little bit greater clarity as spurred by this Substack I just read. And I think one of the things that stands out to me is that sort of riffing off that the Home Alone house was a mansion and it probably cost like at least $1.5 million even back then. And it's probably a $4 million house now, is this reality that a lot of parents that had kids that were growing up in the 90s had waited longer to have kids. They were more wealthy in relative comparison to where their kids are today in their 40s. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people I know in their 40s, my peers, feel really unsatisfied, or they feel like, what did I miss? Did I get something wrong? Everybody told me I get this college degree, I do these things, yeah. And then I'm going to have the $4 million Winnetka mansion that's in Home Alone. And why don't I have that? What's wrong with me? But, and the parents, a lot of parents, and my parents were solidly middle class, but a lot of parents living in these $1 million houses kept telling their kids, you're middle class, when the reality was like, you're the upper level of middle class, and this is really nice. Like, yeah. Family vacations to Europe and taking 2 weeks off and eating out 3 days a week, like, that is luxury living compared to working people. So it's, you know, when we think about today and some of the dissatisfaction that animates, I think, some of our politics, you can point to and say it's these overly nostalgized ideals or ideas coupled with this relative sense of, we haven't achieved what I should have achieved. Like, we're not where we should be. And who is to blame for this, right? Like, seeking to blame. Folks, my name is Maggie Dawn. I'm joined on this pre-recorded episode of The Maggie Dawn Show by my good friend of a slightly younger generation, Luke Mathers.
I think we're the same generation. I'm still a millennial, technically.
I'm solidly Gen X, man. I'm like, we got Gen X, then Gen Z.
I would have thought that you were the top of the millennial. See, there's a gray area in between generations.
I love that you think I'm younger than I am. I'm just going to take that as, you look good, girl, and I'll take that right
perfect
to the bank.
Perfect.
Look, I mean, shoo. We're talking about sort of generational differences. I read an article about the 90s. And how people have overly nostalgized the 90s. So we got, you know, like the raw milk trad movement for the 50s and all of this kind of crazy. And if you don't know what it means to be like a trad or a trad wife, it means traditional. And so it's sort of,
I didn't even
know
that's what it was abbreviated from.
Yes,
gotcha.
That is what the trad movement is. So if you're like a trad 90s person, it means you want to harken back as if the 90s were the tradition. It all speaks, it's all lingo, buzzwords of today for the yearning for yesterday. And I think, you know, when we're always gazing back with our rose-colored glasses, and you may have had a good time in a particular period, it's like, girl, it is time to give up the 80s mall bangs. We need to bring things up to date, not just your hairstyles, but our political discourse. We got to take care of a little business. We're going to come right back, finish up this discussion for the special first hour pre-recorded Maggie Dawn Show on this Friday. Hope you all stick around. Unfortunately, we can't take your calls, but we will definitely continue this great discussion, because that's what we're about, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.